headlines this hour, Iran announces the arrest of over 24 Takfiri terrorists in connection with the recent deadly terror attack on a holy shrine in the city of Shiraz. The Yemeni Ansarullah movement reacts to the visit of an American military delegation to Yemen, warning of US attempts to create tensions in the country. And world leaders gather in Egypt for the UN Climate Summit COP27. The UN chief warns that it is either a climate solidarity pact or a collective suicide pact. Hello and welcome to World News at our headquarters in Tehran. Many thanks for joining us. Iran's intelligence ministry says it has so far arrested 26 Takfiri terrorists in connection with the recent terror attack in the southern city of Shiraz. The ministry says the detainees are nationals of the Azerbaijan Republic, Tajikistan and Afghanistan. The ministry says the terrorists who coordinated the terror attack is a national of the Azerbaijan Republic. According to the ministry, some of the detainees were plotting to carry out acts of terror in various cities, including in the southeastern city of Zahedan. The ministry vowed its operation would continue until all people behind the incident in Shiraz are identified and punished. It saw a gunman enter Shah Cheragh Shrine and open fire on pilgrims, killing over a dozen and injuring another 21. Daesh terror group has claimed responsibility. Head of London-based Islamic Human Rights Commission Masoud Shajareh says the recent attack on a holy shrine in the city of Shiraz was a coordinated terror effort to destabilize Iran.
Absolutely. What it seems to be very clear to see for everyone is that this is a coordinated effort to use every possible ploy to destabilize Iran. In the same way that the destabilization took place for Yemen, for Syria, for Iraq, and indeed Afghanistan, etc. And the Takfiri element, the use of Takfiri elements and the terrorist group is actually a part and parcel of this plan and plot. Without it, it won't happen. We saw in Libya how that played out and how there was a coordination between the United States and Western powers and the Takfiris and how that was implemented. Equally, we are seeing the same process being done in Syria. And this process is being planned for Iran.
Iran's defense ministry has unveiled the upgraded Bavar 373 long-range missile system and launched Sayyad B-4 missile production line. Salman Kujuri reports.
Iran has unveiled the Bavar 373 missile system with a range of over 300 kilometers. Moreover, the Sayyad B-4 defense missile production line was also inaugurated on Sunday in a ceremony attended by Iran's defense minister, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani. During the test fire, a stationary target was detected at a range of more than 450 kilometers by the optimized radar of the missile system and was tracked at the range of about 405 kilometers and was hit at the range of more than 300 kilometers.
Bavar 373 missile system has successfully hit targets at the range of 305 kilometers. This missile system has been designed to counter long-range targets, ballistic missiles, warplanes, and bombers. Even many technologically advanced countries aspire to have such a high-tech missile system.
The long-range missile has solid fuel and was evaluated during operation for the first time. The detection radar range of the Bavar 373 system has increased from 350 to 450 kilometers, and its engagement radar range has increased from 260 to 400 kilometers.
The missile system has been totally produced and upgraded by Iranian specialists at the Defense Ministry and the Army of the Islamic Republic of Iran. We have been able to upgrade the range of this missile in only 2 years. This shows that we can counter all kinds of threats by using domestically made defensive equipment. As much as the threats advance, the Bavar 373 system and other air defense systems advance ahead of their current threats.
The system's missile range has increased from 200 to 300 kilometers, and its engagement height has increased from 27 to 32 kilometers. In the past couple of years, Iran has reached self-sufficiency in manufacturing different types of missiles to boost its defensive capabilities with the aim of protecting its territorial integrity and national sovereignty. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Yemen's Ansar Allah movement warns that the US and the UK are preparing for a fresh round of escalation in the Arab country. A senior Ansar Allah official says several Western military delegations, including from the US, have visited Yemen over the past week. Ali Al-Ghahoum made the comments in an interview with Lebanon's Al Mayadeen news network. Meanwhile, according to the Yemeni media, the US delegations are focused on the Hadramaut province to access its oil. Ansar Allah accuses Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and their allies of plundering Yemen's oil and other natural resources. Recently, it launched a drone attack on a southern oil port. It said the attack was meant to deter the attempts to steal Yemen's crude. Political activist and commentator Hossein al-Bukhaiti says the U.S. wants Saudi dominion over Yemen.
As the United States is stealing the oil from Syria for many years, they are actually doing exactly the same in Yemen. They wanted to fund the war on Yemen using Yemeni oil, despite the fact that Yemenis have not got their salaries in the public sector for about 5 years, because United States, with the support of Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates, has actually moved the central bank from Sana'a to Aden, and they want actually to have more pressure on Yemeni people. They want to force Yemeni civilians and Yemeni army to surrender to Saudi Arabia and Saudi and United Arab Emirates occupation. But as the Yemeni army has warned 2 weeks ago, that if the Saudi Arabia were not totally lift the blockade, allow Yemeni to use their oil to pay salaries either in areas under the control of Sana'a or areas under the occupation of United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia, that they will see more attack against Saudi Arabia.
U.S. forces have been accused of stealing tens of tankers filled with Syrian oil from the country's northeast. Local sources in Yoruba countryside say a convoy of more than 40 tankers loaded with crude from wells occupied by American forces in Hasake province left Syria through Mahmoudia Crossing. They say the convoy entered neighboring Iraq later on. The development comes as the United States maintains its illegal presence in Syria despite objection from Damascus. Syria says the presence of U.S. forces there is aimed at tightening their grip on Syrian oil wells and looting the country's resources. World leaders open COP27 climate talks in Egypt with emissions cuts and funding to fight global warming high on the agenda. An opening address, UN Security Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned that everyone is in the fight of their lives on climate change and losing that fight. He said the way forward is either a climate solidarity pact or a collective suicide pact that will perish humanity. Over 120 world leaders are expected to participate in the two-day summit. President delegates agreed on Sunday to discuss provision of funding developing countries to fight the climate crisis caused by richer nations. The COP27 summit comes amid criticism that progress on curbing emissions has not been enough since the previous event in Scotland. We were earlier joined by historian and investigative journalist Tony Gosling. Here is his take on the COP27 climate summit in Egypt.
Lots of money is going into this. If just a fraction of that was going to the United Nations, for example, which only meets for 5 days a year, I think we'd see a UN which was much more capable. So this almost seems to be one of the places where the world leaders come together, which is eclipsing the United Nations, rather like the World Economic Forum, because its budget is so much bigger. So there are 2 weeks there. We can plan to lessen pollution, but we shouldn't be trying to come up with a market solution. This market solution is simply a playing games, a kind of casino way of doing it. We just have to say, no, we have to do less of this. So there's also some controversy about to what extent climate change is being man-made, and what extent the sun and other things have an effect on it. I think, you know, for me, I'm pretty clear that man does have quite a big effect on the climate. But there are a lot of scientists that contend with this, and the mass media, certainly in Britain, shuts them out of the discussion, shuts them out of the debate. And for example, back in 2013, we heard the scientists at the IPCC, the UN body that's responsible for all this, saying that the average temperature hasn't risen for the last 15 years, and we're going to massage our report in order to try and make out that it has.
Anger is simmering over Italy's refusal to let in migrants plucked from the sea. A German rescue charity organization says it will take legal action against the Italian government for violating international law. The organization says it will file a petition in courts in two Italian cities of Rome and Catania. That after Italy barred around 200 migrants to get off a rescue ship in Catania. Prior to that, Italian authorities let in 144 vulnerable passengers on board a German-flagged vessel while refusing to accept others, those allowed to disembark were children and the sick. The ship was then ordered to leave the port of Catania. Italy is now facing criticism for a selective approach towards receiving migrants. Human rights groups have called on Rome to stop discrimination. They say the law of the sea requires that all rescued migrants should be disembarked in a safe place. North Korea has vowed a, quote, sustained, resolute, and overwhelming military response to the recent joint air drills by South Korea and the United States. The North Korean military said the war games were an open provocation aimed at intentionally escalating the tensions. It added the exercises were dangerous and of very high aggressive nature. The military noted that the situation grows more unstable due to what it called reckless military hysteria of Seoul and Washington. Last week, South Korea and the United States carried out their largest ever air drills for 6 days. Hundreds of warplanes, including US B-1B bombers, participated in the exercises. Washington and Seoul said the drills were in response to Pyongyang's launches of missiles and its possible plan to resume nuclear tests. Pyongyang, however, viewed the drills as a rehearsal for an invasion.
Sirens going off in South Korea. Another salvo of North Korean ballistic missiles fired. This is part of Pyongyang's testing blitz. A new annual record for missile launches was set back in June. And just this week, 23 missiles were launched in a single day, setting a new daily record. U.S. officials have indicated that North Korea is ready to conduct a nuclear test at any time. Let's not forget, these missiles have the ability to reach U.S. soil, specifically California. Meanwhile, Washington and Seoul have conducted their biggest ever Air Force drills. North Korea's firing of intercontinental ballistic missiles and more U.S. war games. A dangerous and volatile concoction, a war scenario which, if it were true, would involve nuclear weapons. That was evident from the U.S. side when the U.S. Air Force deployed the two B-1B long-range heavy bombers on the final day of the military exercises. This was the first time B-1Bs have flown to the Korean Peninsula since December 2017. So why is Pyongyang on the offensive? Even though the missile launches grabbed all the attention, less notice were developments in the North Korean nuclear doctrine. In September, North Korea updated a 2013 law setting out its nuclear weapons policies and announced that it would respond to attacks against its nuclear command and control systems by launching a nuclear strike automatically and immediately.
The fundamental mission of our nuclear forces is to deter a war, but our nukes can never be confined to the single mission of war deterrent, even at a time when a situation we are not desirous of at all is created on this land.
The U.S. and its allies in this region better be careful. Even an accidental targeting of anything in North Korea could signal a dangerous reaction, and that could spell nuclear Armageddon.
The view from the White House and the U.S. allies in the region is that Pyongyang is looking for attention. They believe that North Korea is deliberately ramping up tensions with its neighbors to ultimately call for engagement and concessions from South Korea, Japan, and the United States. Yet there are doubts if that is really the case. Maybe another message is for the U.S. to leave that region altogether.
North Korea's barrage of missiles is sending the U.S. another message other than military and missile capabilities. North Korea has been under severe U.S. sanctions. For starters, it has sanctioned properties and belongings of the Workers' Party of Korea. Freezing the property of members of the Workers' Party of Korea essentially amounts to stealing from everyday Koreans, as the party's membership stands at 6.5 million people, or a quarter of North Korea's population. Harsh U.S. bilateral and U.N. sanctions have had particularly devastating effects on the North Korean economy. The list of industries directly targeted include the mineral trade, seafood, textiles, and agricultural products. Previous talks between the U.S. and North Korea hinged on the elimination of these sanctions in return for Pyongyang to stop its ballistic nuclear program, but the U.S. was not willing to give any concessions, resulting in a stalemate. Meanwhile, the U.S. believes that China and Russia have the leverage to persuade North Korea not to resume nuclear bomb testing. But why should they do that, given the Ukraine conflict and how U.S. feels about Russia and U.S.'s appetite for confrontation with China, either militarily or when it comes to trade? This idea seems far-fetched. Perhaps a grand bargain can be reached between U.S., Russia, and China when it comes to North Korea, if the desire is there before it is too late. And as far as U.S. foreign policy goes, it has failed in many respects. When it comes to countries like Iran, North Korea, China, Russia, Syria, well, the list is long. The current U.S. President Joe Biden, like many of his predecessors, has failed to execute a clear diplomatic path to reach solutions, opting instead for provocation and military aggression.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
When experts and even American citizens say democracy is under threat in the U.S., there is no exaggeration. According to Americans for Tax Fairness, billionaires have poured hundreds of millions of dollars into campaigns this cycle, largely to benefit Republican candidates. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. In this regard, the website of Common Dreams wrote, with under a week until the U.S. midterm elections, Americans for Tax Fairness revealed recently that billionaires have poured hundreds of millions of dollars into campaigns this cycle, largely to benefit Republican candidates. A torrent of billionaire cash is drowning our democracy, declared Frank Clement, executive director of Americans for Tax Fairness, ATF. Money talks when it comes to influencing candidates and winning elections. And the loudest voices by far are billionaires pushing for lower taxes so they can accumulate even greater wealth and have even more power and influence. If we are going to have an economy that works for everyone, billionaires need to start paying their fair share, Clement added. And if we are going to have a democracy that works for everyone, we need to greatly curb the influence of billionaire money in our politics, he said. Based on an analysis of Federal Election Commission, FEC, data from Open Secrets, ATF, found that through the end of September, 465 American billionaires have pumped over $881 million into federal midterm races, with the top 20 donor households giving 73% of the contributions, or collectively more than $643 million. Putting that into a national context, ATF tweeted that billionaires represent 2 millionth percent of the American population, but they are responsible for 7.4% of all political donations so far this cycle. The group's report highlights how unprecedented the findings are, explaining that $881 million was already a 44% increase in billionaire contributions over the entire 2018 midterm cycle, which totaled $611 million based on an earlier ATF analysis, reflecting the GOP's enthusiasm for tax cuts that benefit wealthy individuals and corporations. ATF found that by a 3-2 margin, more billionaire cash is supporting Republicans, about 59%, than Democrats, about 39%, with most of the remaining 2% going to Super Political Action Committees, PACs, which can collect unlimited contributions from donors for backers of cryptocurrency and the Israeli regime. The takeaways align with Bloomberg reporting, which detailed recently Citadel's Ken Griffin, Blackstone Incorporation Chief Executive Officer Steve Schwarzman, and Oracle Corporation founder Larry Ellison are among the billionaire Republican donors who have rapidly scaled up their political contributions this midterm election cycle, boosting the odds of a divided Washington for the next 2 years. The three men worth a collective $150 billion are among the 12 top political donors ahead of the elections, according to the most recent data from Open Secrets. Of that dozen, 10 are backing Republicans in a big way. They have spent a culminative $338 million, up 250% from the 2018 cycle. If you look at the people who are giving on the Republican side, Griffin and Schwarzman and others, they're all historically Republican donors. David Tomasi, a founding partner at Chartwell Strategy Group, told Bloomberg, adding, "It's not like this is their first rodeo with giving. It's just got more weight behind it." According to the ATF report, there has been an explosion this election cycle of fundraising for super PACs created to support a single candidate. Donations to such single candidate super PACs have risen from $127.5 million in the 2018 midterm cycle to $323.2 million on November 1, 2022, a 150% increase. This cycle, Republican candidates are benefiting from roughly 75% of all single-candidate super PAC spending. The funding for these PACs often come almost exclusively from billionaires. Some of the PACs spotlighted in the report are for GOP candidates in key U.S. Senate races. The Wisconsin Truth PAC, created to re-elect Senator Ron Johnson. The Saving Arizona PAC, largely funded by billionaire Peter Thiel in support of his former employee Blake Masters. The Protect Ohio Values PAC, another Thiel-backed group for another former employee J.D. Vance, and 34N22 Incorporation, which is named for the college jersey of former professional football player Herschel Walker, who is trying to unseat Senator Raphael Warnock. Those races, along with closely watched contests in Arizona, Nevada, and Pennsylvania, will help determine the makeup of the currently split Senate, in which Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris officially breaks tie voters, but the filibuster gives Republicans an effective veto over most bills. Republicans are also working to take control of the House of Representatives, which is now narrowly held by Democrats for the final 2 years of President Joe Biden's first term. Ken Gross, a former FEC counsel now at the law firm Akin Gump, told Bloomberg, if even one chamber flips, that is appealing to a certain number of donors who are not looking forward to having one party control. They're just as happy to have a stalemate and no legislation action. The ATF report notes that more than a quarter, about $243 million of the billionaire contributions, have gone to the four congressional super PACs of the House and Senate leadership of both political parties. The two GOP PACs have vacuumed up three-quarters, about 75%, or $181 million in contributions. Most of this money is being spent on TV ads attacking opponents. As congressional candidates, along with those running for key state positions that could influence future elections, have campaigned this cycle on former President Donald Trump's big lie that he won in 2020, Biden has framed the midterms as a crucial opportunity to safeguard U.S. democracy from MAGA extremists, a message he stressed in a recent night speech. Make no mistake, democracy is on the ballot for us, Biden warned, adding, you have the power, it's your choice, it's your decision, the fate of the nation, the fate of the soul of America lies where it always does, with people, in your hands and your ballot.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood. And we are having a discussion with regards to the idea and the fact that the messengers came to this world, they were brought and sent by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in certain circumstances that the earth and the people of the earth were facing. And amongst those circumstances is what Imam Ali alayhi salam reminds us in the second sermon. And he tells us that these circumstances are what? These are those circumstances whereby the people started to follow the devil. They followed the shaitan, they followed his goals, they followed his path. And as a result of that, they were stomped upon, they were crushed under the hooves and under the feet of these devils, of these enemies of God. These tribulations and these tests, they crushed the people. They couldn't come out of these areas, out of these problems. And therefore he goes on to say that these were people who are in a state of confusion. They were lost. فَهُمْ فِيهَا تَائِهُونَ. They were lost in these tribulations and trials, and they couldn't come out of them. جَاهِلُونَ. They continued to be in a state of ignorance. مَفْتُونُونَ. They were deceived. And they were not living good lives. They realized this and they knew that.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam is creating a picture. He's kind of drawing this beautiful, or this you can say, not beautiful as such, but you can say the intricate and quite artistic painting about the reality of the society at that time. He's as if he's painting with the most, you can say, the most superb colors, most relevant colors to show us the society at that time, that state of confusion that the people were in. Then he says, "Naumuhum suhud." Their sleep was not sleep. Actually, when they were asleep, they weren't able to sleep well. They didn't have proper sleep. They didn't have rest. They always in a state of worry and confusion. Wakuhluhum dumu'a, and their eyes had kohl, but that kohl were their tears. Their tears was their kohl. They were like that. Bi'ardhin 'alimuha muljam, in a land where the knowledgeable people were shackled. They couldn't do what they had to do. They couldn't guide the people. They were not even given importance. وَجَاهِلُهَا مُكَرَّمْ, in a land where the ignorant people were given value. They were given position. They were respected. And you can see the exact situation today, that the people of knowledge are not taken seriously. But people who have money, people who have that sheen and that shine, people who, for example, have a good physique, though they can be the most ignorant of people, they are given importance. The celebrities, let's say, I'm not pointing out at all celebrities, there might be some good celebrities. I'm talking about the ones that are not knowledgeable, the ignorant ones. those who misguide others. Talking about those ones. وَجَاهِلُهَا مُكَرَّمْ. The ignorant ones are given value. This was the circumstance. These were the grounds when the messengers came. You can see how Imam Ali alayhi salam slowly and gradually he takes us into this, you know, journey, showing us live what the situation was at that time and at those times when the messengers came.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, when we look at the world today, and we see that really the same thing is happening, especially for those who are living under oppressive societies, dictatorships, or they are living under a democracy, a flawed democracy, not an unreal democracy, which fools the people. And you know about these democracies today. Even those who call for democracy in the world today are the ones that have the weakest and most wretched forms of democracy. They say democracy, but they don't have democracy in reality. It's like a few rich people that decide what's going to happen in that community. People just are just used as pawns whenever they are used for any purpose, let's say. We see that in the society of today, the same thing's happening. People are in the state of ignorance. Look at the majority of the people of the world. They might have information in their heads, but are they knowledgeable? Do they know about the purpose of their life? Do they know about where they are going and who is controlling the affairs? Are they aware about the direction in which the societies are going? Do they care about the oppression that is happening in different parts of the world? Do they really worry about it? You see, these same people in the world, they see with their own eyes that their leaders, they go to attack another country with the excuse that there is a dictator in that country, while these same people are the ones that support dictators in the world. See them. You can see in the Middle East, majority of the dictators are being supported by those very people that find excuses to fight dictators when they want. The people of double standards. But why are these double standards not seen? Why are the people blind? It is because they are thrown into confusion. They are drowning in this state of confusion. They are in need of someone to remove them from that confusion. This was the situation at the time when the messengers and the prophets had came. People in those states, confused, in need of light. And that is when the messengers and the prophets came. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sador Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., newly leaked emails have revealed a secret plot by lawyers for Donald Trump to steal the 2020 presidential election in Georgia. Team Trump believed Justice Clarence Thomas was their only chance to stop Joe Biden's win. In an email reply, coup plotter and Trump lawyer John Eastman agreed Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas could kick the Georgia legislature into gear. We have taken a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Website Salon.com gives us more details. Former President Donald Trump's lawyers believe that Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas was their best bet to overturn the results of the 2020 election, according to newly released emails. Eight emails obtained by the website Politico revealed correspondence among Trump lawyers discussing legal strategies to convince Republican members of Congress to block the official certification of electoral votes on 6 of January 2021. The emails, which Trump legal advisor John Eastman tried to shield from Congress, were obtained after Eastman's lawyers accidentally uploaded the emails to be shared with a House January 6 committee in a public Dropbox link. In one email from Trump attorney Ken Chesbrough to John Eastman and others, Kenneth Chesbrough wrote that Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas would end up being key to their plot to overturn President Joe Biden's win. We want to frame things so that Clarence Thomas could be the one to issue some sort of stay or other circuit justice opinion saying Georgia is in legitimate doubt, Kenneth Chesbrough wrote just days before the 6th of January 2021 Capitol riot. Supreme Court justices are responsible for handling emergency matters in individual states, and Supreme Court Justice Thomas is the justice assigned to handle emergency matters in Georgia, putting him in a position to receive any urgent appeal of Trump's lawsuit to the Supreme Court. John Eastman responded to the email agreeing with the plan. Their emails further discussed filing a lawsuit that they hoped would result in an order that tentatively held that Biden's electoral votes from Georgia were not valid due to election fraud. John Eastman, who once clerked for Justice Clarence Thomas, attempted to withhold the emails from the January 6th Select Committee, but a judge ordered the emails to be turned over, citing evidence of likely crimes committed by Donald Trump and John Eastman. At least one email included correspondence between Eastman and Clarence Thomas's wife, Ginny Thomas, inviting Eastman to speak on 8th of December 2020 to a group of conservative activists to provide an update about election litigation, according to the Washington Post. Ginny Thomas also lobbied state legislators in Arizona and Wisconsin via email, urging them to help overturn Joe Biden's victory. Following the release of the emails, legal experts raised concerns about Thomas's role on the Supreme Court and criticized him for not recusing himself from matters related to his wife's efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. They had a damn insider on SCOTUS who they thought would help them overthrow our democracy. He's married to a deranged MAGA cult member. He won't even recuse himself, wrote former federal prosecutor Richard Signorelli. The report comes as legal observers and government watchdog groups call for an investigation into Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas's refusal to recuse himself from election-related cases. The Washington Examiner has more on this same story. An apparent mishap with Dropbox led to media outlets obtaining access to a batch of emails that revealed former President Donald Trump's attorneys viewed Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas as key to overturning the 2020 election. Trump lawyer John Eastman begrudgingly shared a Dropbox link with the January 6th committee on 28th of October in compliance with a court order demanding he turn over a batch of emails but asked the panel not to open the files. In a subsequent court filing, lawyers for the committee included the link, unaware the public could access the files, according to House General Counsel Douglas Letter. We were not aware that the links in Dr. Eastman's email remained active and had no intention to provide this type of public access to the materials at this stage. Providing public access to this material at this point was purely inadvertent on our part, Douglas Letter wrote in a brief letter to the court. On 19th of October, U.S. District Judge David Carter ordered John Eastman to hand over a batch of emails to the panel in a scathing opinion in which Carter effectively argued that Donald Trump had lied in court during a challenge to the 2020 election. John Eastman appeared to drag his feet and waited until the deadline he was given, 28th of October, to hand over the emails to the House Select Committee. While turning over the batch of emails, Eastman pleaded with the committee not to comb through them because he planned to appeal the 19th of October order. The committee went through the email batch anyways, with Douglas Letter arguing there had not been a court order inhibiting it from doing so, per the report. John Eastman then filed an emergency motion with the 9th U.S. District Court of Appeals, and the panel included the Dropbox link in its response brief, per Letter. We have communicated this information to counsel for Dr. Eastman so that they can deactivate the links going forward, Douglas Letter added. On Wednesday, the website Politico published redacted emails from that batch showcasing Trump lawyer Kenneth Chesbrough and John Eastman theorizing that Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas was their best hope of blocking certification of the 2020 election. Both Chesbrough and Eastman were architects of Donald Trump's efforts to thwart the 2020 election in courts of law. We want to frame things so that Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas could be the one to issue some sort of stay or other circuit justice opinion saying Georgia is in legitimate doubt, Kenneth Chesbrough explained in one of the email exchanges. I think I agree with this, John Eastman later replied. Kenneth Chesbrough was more explicit in another email the same day. If we can just get this case pending before the Supreme Court by 5th of January 2021, ideally, with something positive written by a judge or justice, hopefully Justice Thomas, I think it's our best shot at holding up the count of a state in Congress, Chesbrough said. John Eastman has long been embroiled in a legal battle with the House January 6 committee. He has already turned over thousands of pages worth of emails from his Chapman University account to the House panel, which had subpoenaed him for the documents.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful hadith and tradition which has been transmitted and passed down to us from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. This hadith is interesting because it is concerned with the criterion by means of which we can understand that Allah wants and desires good for a community. We have many hadiths which have been related and passed down to us regarding what happens when Allah wants good for an individual, right? For example, it's been mentioned in the hadith that فَقَّهَهُ فِي الدِّينِ. God, when He wants good for a person, He makes him knowledgeable of religion, makes him aware of his own faults, makes him abstain from the world. Right? These are some of the signs of, that by means of which a person can, kind of ascertain that Allah wants and desires to lead him to good and to his felicity. But sometimes it can be hard to distinguish that Allah intends to lead a community towards its feliciousness, to its sa'adat, its goodness in this world and in the hereafter. Right, so how can we ascertain whether this is so? The reason why this is difficult is that a community is made up of a number of different individuals, right? Not just one individual. So therefore, it makes it a little bit more difficult to ascertain it because we have to take a lot of different people and individuals into account. Fortunately, we have a hadith, narrative from the Prophet, which kind of alludes to a criterion by means of which we can distinguish this intention that God has regarding the goodness for the community. The Prophet ﷺ said, when Allah wants good for a community, He increases their scholars and decreases their ignorant ones. So one of the signs by means of which we can ascertain whether Allah intends to, give a certain community, a group of people good, is that their number of scholars, of learned people in that community increases. The literate people there, the people who study and who are knowledgeable, about matters, they increase. And ignorance amongst that community decreases. One might say that, literacy is kind of a sign that Allah, He loves this community, He desires this nation, He's fond of them. In continuation, the Prophet said, so when the scholar speaks, he finds supporters, right? So the more that the number of literate people and knowledgeable people increase in the community, when a scholar speaks, those people understand and they accept his words. But when the ignorant one speaks, he is defeated. And when, and conversely, when an ignorant person speaks, invites those people towards evil or unbecoming acts, people, reject him and disapprove of him, right? This is a good sign that Allah, He loves this community and He's fond of them. He intends to lead that community towards success and sa'ad.